You're listening to IsraelScene.com.
And you're listening to IsraelScene.com.
Listening to IsraelScene.com.
Seen through the eyes of Steve, that's myself.
And you're on.
Two characters passionate about everything that happens in Israel.
IsraelScene.com.
You're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve.
And this is Yoram.
And this is a special program on the 2006 Lebanon War.
One more time, hopefully the last.
But I'm not very optimistic with the way European countries have been acting. Not of late, since they are constantly acting this fashion, supporting terrorism, accusing those who are defending freedom and the fight against global war and terrorism.
But you got to admit, they're very deeply involved in being stable.
They're consistent, at least. Since today, in Haaretz newspaper, it was reported, and I don't know for sure if this is true, but it was reported that the French foreign minister, Blase, what an appropriate name, on his visit to Lebanon today, said, quote, "It was clear that we could never accept a destabilization of Lebanon, which could lead to destabilization of the region, and that Iran is a significant, respected player in the Middle East, which is playing a stabilizing role." Excuse me if I'm laughing, but I'm wondering if he was smoking too much dope.
I don't think the French smoke dope. I think they snort their drug of choice, or they just drink it.
Because it sure sounds like he is in la-la land and in denial, which is typical, considering they have 6 million Muslims in their country.
One of these days, their foreign minister will thus be
a Muslim. Yes. So, aside from that little moment of rant and rave, so what are we going to talk about, although there's so much to talk about? What would you like to start off with?
One of the subjects I thought was appropriate was an encounter that we had on email this week. I sent you several articles, probably from Haaretz, that were critical or criticizing or questioning the government's policy, the handling of the war in Lebanon.
Ah, yes.
As it turned out, this was part of a general cycle here in Israel of many people questioning the government, the wisdom of its the tactics, of how it was handling the army, of how it was controlling the army's involvement. Most of the criticism and the questioning had to do with whether indeed the appropriate and the proper thing at this point was to rely on the Air Force and its bombing runs over Lebanon to bring about the desired defeat, really, of Hezbollah, or whether there were some other military actions that were more appropriate. And your response, Steve, to me by email was, and if I had my computer here, I would read it to you, it was like, this is not the time to be critical of the government. This is the time to, you know, get behind the government and support the government and so on and so forth. And I think that there are there's a functional, basic misunderstanding here, which is that criticizing the government is not necessarily denouncing the government, and it's not being against the government.
It's undermining the government, though. And that's the point that I feel is important to make. If we're at war, and we've elected a prime minister who, for better or worse, has a defense minister who has never had any experience as a defense minister or pretty much in war, and they make a decision which 86% of the population supported defeating Hezbollah, then to sit there and to second guess, which is basically what most of the articles were about, we should have, could have, would have, if we, is it doesn't help a thing, and in fact only undermines our determination to defeat Hezbollah, because they look at it as, just what we suspected. You know, there's dissension in the ranks, and if we just keep going and we keep hitting, then that dissension's going to get worse, disappointment's going to happen, the Israelis have no patience when it comes to war, which is true, and as a result, we will gain inspiration from this kind of criticism. First of all, most of the criticism that I have heard, be it in the Western news media, the networks on TV, and in the Israeli press has been speculation. Now, I also have my own personal criticism about how I feel, as being no expert in military matters, felt that we should have gone in there on the ground right away, and we should have done what needed to be done instead of looking and seeing how it plays on BBC. I really don't care how it plays on BBC and Sky News and CNN. Fox I have no problems with, considering they've been pretty fair and balanced, as they say. Certainly fairly showing how this side of what's going on here as we get bombarded by 100 and some odd rockets a day. And I can tell you from July 13th through at least July 25th how many rockets have landed in this country, which doesn't seem to be a concern to the rest of the world, because there's only Jews getting killed, maimed, wounded, and property being destroyed. So I don't find at this point to speculate on what we should be doing is appropriate and has any real value, except that it gives the opinion writers and reporters on radio, TV, and in the printed press an opportunity to speak their mind. But in reality, as far as the war effort is concerned, that should be done after, when is introspection and a look to see did they succeed in their goals, and if not, why they didn't succeed, and if they didn't succeed, get rid of them, and let's get someone else who may be better the next time, if there is a next time. I think this is a crucial, pivotal moment in the fight against global terror, and I think it's a pivotal moment for us in Israel. In terms of our struggle for survival, and in spite of what the press is saying, in spite of the Kana carnage, I think we do care where we bomb. I do care where we strike, and we do look for where Hezbollah is. And Hezbollah loves to sit in the population. Hezbollah knows it's their war right now. They know that in order to attack them, that we're going to have casualties. And they know the Western press already is biased against Israel, even before this venture started with being attacked by Hezbollah or from a sovereign country, which the government of that country doesn't want take any responsibility for.
They don't want sovereignty.
They don't want sovereignty. They want something else. And just before this ceasefire, hopefully we'll get this online within hours of this conversation,
whatever it is,
that the Sonora already stated that he was pleased with Hezbollah for their sacrifice and for their, I mean, there's nowhere to go with this. There's no one to talk to. Who are we going to talk to? We're going to talk to the United Nations? What is the United Nations? You know, it's a lion without teeth, and it doesn't even bark very well either. There's nothing happening in the UN. There's nothing happening in Western Europe. They're spineless cowards. They put their heads in the sand and are unwilling to see that we are at the precipice of a global catastrophe in terms of fighting terrorism. And this is not going to be regional or local. This is global. And that when the nuclear bomb falls somewhere in the Middle East, that there's no big wall over Spain, and that the fallout is going to reach Europe. And people are going to die there. So until they grow up, until they have a spine, until they're not overrun by the Muslims in Europe, we're fighting this war alone. And I must say, we're fighting it with the support, however popular or unpopular Bush is, we're fighting with the support of the U.S. and to some degree a crippled United Kingdom, because Tony Blair is willing to put his stake with Bush in terms of the fight against terror, although let's be honest, his government isn't behind him, and certainly the people who have been notoriously friendly to Israel, that's with my tongue in cheek.
If not.
don't support his effort. And really doesn't, I don't think they care very much about what goes on with Israel. And if it was wiped off the map, as far as they're concerned, most probably all the better. And they could always say, I told you so. The white paper made it real clear.
I wish I could remember where your response began on the subject that I thought we were in point of fact talking about, which, as we know, seeing as we have a certain amount of leeway here, and the overall director of this IsraelScene.com is not about to come in here and fire us, it doesn't really matter. But to
thank
get
God,
back,
there are no paid enough.
To get back to, first of all, it's quite obvious that in many ways, whatever the criticism is, certainly in this case, in this particular war, in this particular time and place, there have been some serious problems that many people have felt needed answering, needed to be questioned, and that the government needed to look at. The polls all show incredible support, 90% support, I think, for how the IDF is doing it, and 70, 80% support for the government, and so on and so forth. But that's, I mean, the people, in a sense, are in a patriotic fervor, and that's what one can expect. But certainly one cannot, or should not, I don't think, use that enthusiasm as a basis for policy and as a basis for understanding what is really going on and what are the problems involved. And here we are. We're right here today with the problem smack in our face where, and everybody said this from the beginning, from the get-go, everybody said, if there's one mistake, whether it's on that side or on this side, everything is going to change. We all know that because that's the way it works here. That's what, we don't like it, and it's not right, and it's not fair, and it's not just blah, blah, blah. That is the way it works. One rocket, one Hezbollah rocket landing, or let's go back a little further, one Qassam from Gaza landing in a kindergarten, not 3 minutes after the children have left, but 2 minutes before the children were going to leave, and killing half a dozen children would have changed everything in Gaza, as the kidnapping of one soldier suddenly changed the whole game. One disaster, or something perceived as a disaster, changed everything. Everything had to change, and did. I mean, people, the government, and so and all the people involved changed gears and ran with the ball in another direction. And the same with Lebanon. We all knew that if one of those Lebanese rockets lands, same thing, in a kindergarten, in a bomb shelter, and kills 5, 10, 15 people all at once, the army's it's just going to change everything. And the opposite, which is ultimately what happened. One of our shells, by some reason, is going to land in a place where there are a lot of civilians. Whether there are munitions there or not is totally beside the point. And that's going to change the war. The war will basically have to end there and then. Now, if the war has to end and the real goal of the war, the weakening and the destruction of Hezbollah, has not been accomplished, then we're in real trouble. And we were in real trouble when we weren't able to take care of Hezbollah within the first few days, the first week, certainly. I mean, this is an army that destroyed seven armies in the War of Independence. This is an army that destroyed three, four large armies in the 67 war. And this is what is expected. It's not only expected by us, it's also expected by them and expected by everybody. So if that's not happening, then people ask questions. I mean,
ask questions because there's expectations.
And
okay?
Because people have a right to ask questions.
Everybody has a right to ask questions. No one. I'm defending the right for people to ask questions. I'm saying when people start making opinions that the war's not going this way, the war should be this way, it should be fought this way, it serves no purpose. It's pure speculation. They don't have the intelligence to back it up at this point. You're in the middle of a conflict.
But they have the basic knowledge that it's not working.
We don't know if it's not working. What we do know is that 140 Katyushas per day are falling and continue to fall on Israel. If ultimately that is the test, then it's not working. While I think there's some truth to that, at the same time there's other things going on in terms of destroying infrastructure and a plan, a military plan that includes ultimately stopping. The most difficult actually is stopping the Katyushas from falling. But there is another road that I see that's happening is if you destroy the infrastructure, if you close them down, if you slowly squeeze them, if you slowly destroy their apparatus and their military, that ultimately those Katyushas will ultimately stop. The problem is, for whatever reason, it's easy, quantitatively speaking, to say on TV, in the press, everywhere, well, 100 Katyushas fell today. It looks like the IDF didn't do their job. Well, if you measure it that way, that's true at this moment in time. Again,
The 100 Katyushas are falling day after day after.
I understand
and
that.
That is not tolerable. And not only is it not tolerable,
apparently is tolerable, considering that we're willing to tolerate it and allow the army its opportunity to do what needs to be done. It may take a week more, it may take 2 weeks more, but you have to allow the army its opportunity.
But
if they fail, then there can be evaluation that they failed.
Then it's a little late.
It's not a little late. They're not going to change because you open your mouth or I open my mouth and criticize them.
Well, obviously. I mean, no, people are not making critics of the government because they think the government is going to come to a crashing halt and it's going to change policy like within the next 35 minutes. But in point of fact, what's happened, and we're dealing with that today, we dealt with this yesterday, is that we no longer have the what appeared to be, and it was obviously a bit of an illusion, we knew it was an illusion, like this open space. America's supporting us, and America's going to support us until, ad infinitum, until we're finished, and there won't be anything that'll hold us back.
I don't think that's...
Here's the proof.
But there's no proof to that. There's some people who have made comments on air, and mostly it's been the reporters who've made this comment, not the government who made this comment, except for one idiot, the Justice Minister, Ramon, who's now been told to shut up, because he doesn't know what he's talking about, made this comment that because nothing happened at the meeting in Europe, that we have a carte blanche. Well, he has his own problems, personal problems. The fact is, except for him, no one in the government has said they have a carte blanche. It's the people who have said they had a carte blanche has been the reporters, has been the networks, has been the people in the press. We have a support from the United States and to some degree Great Britain and some degree silently speaking from members of the European Union, not particularly France, but others. There's a roar of silence coming out of Europe, and there's a roar of silence coming out of many of the Arab countries. So yes, so there was a tragedy that took place. And yes, all of a sudden, then there's an opportunity to be self-righteous and to say what a terrible person or a terrible country Israel is and that they targeted civilians. But we know from the past that this was a matter of time. And we apologized, but this is a war, and the war causes casualties, unfortunately, and especially when you have an enemy that hides and perpetrates its actions, its aggression, in the middle of a population. But that all said and done, I want to look at another side of this, and I want to look in the side from the soldiers. Do hold a certain respect, a certain obligation for not hitting civilians. And I heard a story, okay, just recently, I think the last day, it wasn't this war, it was the previous war, from direct experience, somebody actually was part of this operation, who shall be nameless at this point, said real clearly to give an understanding of how important it is for us, including risking our own personal lives, not to hurt civilian population. There was a terrorist in Lebanon who was behind the woman and shooting, and the soldier, Israeli soldier, in the better part of valor, decided could not shoot, and of course was killed not shooting this woman, which really needed to be done in order to protect himself, but he couldn't do it. There's also a soldier, even the soldiers that were killed, that were ambushed. They were ambushed because we were unwilling to go in there with the Air Force and literally demolish the town, which most probably should have been done to save lives.
Which is part of the criticism. Which
what,
was
that we should blanket?
The military policy we were pursuing, the military strategy we were pursuing was flawed. And it needed to be changed.
So what do you mean?
And it needed to be changed as soon as possible in order to get the job done before, while we still had the ticket that allowed us to continue.
We still have the ticket to continue.
Well, we'll see. It's a day-by-day, hour-by-hour question, and it's hard to know.
When it comes to our survival, if in fact this is the case, we're going to do whatever has to be done, regardless of who, including the U.S., tells us what to do.
Including ourselves. Look, we still have to survive here. And ideally, I mean, the point here is not just to survive. The point here is to create a creative society which is contributing to the welfare of the human community. I mean, that's really the purpose of our being here as a group.
And we do a good job when we're in peace.
We're doing an amazing job even when we're in war, to tell you the truth. But as that process, as the brain drain, and the degree to which the society becomes non-functional, and the degree to which society begins to lose its ability to work properly and to create properly, and to support the people who need to be supported. That's the degree to which we're not able to really give our valued contribution. And that's a tragedy more than not for us so much as it is for the rest of the planet. And I think that at the point when people started to say, wait a minute, look, the left, by and large, got on the bandwagon. Amos Oz in the Los Angeles Times said, we're all together. There's no more left. The left is no more, is not able to take the position that it traditionally took. And I saw on television when they showed all those reservists going into the base in uniform, going on, you know, on their way to serving. One of them was a Mossi Raz from Meretz, and he said, I disagree with the policies, but, you know, the call-up's a call-up, and we're obligated to respond and to go and do our best. I think that the criticism, as it came and it waited for at least 10 days, 15 days, was in place. And even if it wasn't, that the criticism of the critic, the attempt to shut down all criticism and to get everybody to get quiet so that the government could go ahead the way it was going is not necessarily the best policy. You have a business, and your business, you know, turns over $10,000 a week. And then you decide to try another business tact of some sort. And all of a sudden, your business is only doing $3,000 a week. Don't you want somebody to tell you, hey, there's something happening here that you need to pay attention to?
The problem is that you don't. The problem is that it's not so clear that you've moved from 10,000 to 3,000. What you do know,
which makes it even more critical that you look carefully at what you're doing.
But to talk about it in the press is not going to change policy.
It's going to hopefully move people in the government to look more carefully, to reconsider, to say, is this really the right policy?
You don't think that the government is you don't think the military is looking at every single opportunity or situation that doesn't work to reevaluate it? That's the nature of the military.
I'm questioning a part of the nature of the military is to slap each other on the back and say, far out.
No, that's your perception, but I have been in the military here, and I'm telling you, I don't see it. I really don't see it.
I think that's the perception in every institution. Support each other and to tell each other how groovy they are and how wonderful we're all doing.
We can't afford that.
No, of course we can't. That's the point.
And so therefore, by its own nature, because of the need to survive, I'm absolutely convinced that we don't do that. I haven't seen that anywhere to show me that the military is just interested in patting each other on the back. Screw the soldiers in the field. We're going to do what we want to do, whether it works or not.
After every war,
I don't buy it, because you have the people, even the generals and the colonels and the majors have children in the field.
That's how people behave in institutions.
You can't generalize this. You're just like
in hierarchy.
Just like you said before, that we're now nationalistic and gung-ho on supporting our country. You know what? There's a difference between the somber support that exists here, the seriousness of the support, and living in America and having, you know, being in America and saying, you know, love it or leave it, or America is all. It's not that kind of support, and I don't even want to give the impression out there that it is that kind of support for the country. You know, the fact is that people support the country, the military operation. They realize the importance of it. They realize the severity of it, and we support them at this point in time, but in a somber way, not running around going nuts. It's a high-pitched shrill of, we have no choice, and our survival is at stake. So therefore, I have at Haaretz, there was an article on the 27th, which is a few days ago, called Those Who Cannot Protect Their Freedom Do Not Deserve It. And it was written by Yair Ettinger. I want to give credit. And it was about the Golani Brigade 13th Battalion, Company A. And they were gathered in a few minutes. They were going to cross over to Lebanon and join the battle with their comrades in the 51st Battalion, who fought in Bin Jabril. And the captain says, it's our turn now, says Captain Ori Lavi, and it's our turn to protect the border, and we're going to carry out any mission we need to against any force in the best way possible, and if we don't, we have no right to exist. He also said, we will not lose this war. We did not start it, but it is our duty to protect the Jewish nation and to see to it that the residents of Metula and Haifa can live in peace. If we don't do it, no one will. We waited 2,000 years for our own state, and we won't fold because a group of terrorists think that they can scare us. So someone who cannot protect his freedom does not deserve it. He continued, when missiles and rockets land on all of the northern cities and reach Haifa, when two of our soldiers have been kidnapped and 10 have been killed and dozens have been wounded, this is no time to talk, it's time to fight. And from the moment we cross the border, you must be super alert, super sharp. We're threatened from every side. Each of you is responsible for his comrades. So, everyone here must be alert and do everything possible to spot the terrorist first, he told them. We must be the ones to open fire first. We must surprise them, not the other way around. Everyone is responsible for his own life and the life of his comrade and all our lives. We are all in the same boat. So the soldiers joined the army only 8 months ago, and most of them are 19 years old, and they look like boys, obviously. Their combat experience consists of brief activity in the Gaza Strip, but most say that they have been dreamed about fighting in Lebanon since they joined the army, young, gung-ho kids. I've been in the army for 6 years and have never had as much confidence as I have in this company, said Levy. You've proved yourselves more than once, not only in fighting. We did well in training, we did well in Gaza, and we will do well now. So after the talk, the soldiers took some time out, and another text messaged on his cell phone, and some didn't tell their parents where they were. I remember that my son, when he was in Lebanon, back a ways, didn't let us know at all that he was in Lebanon, so we wouldn't worry, and he wouldn't worry about us worrying. The company medic admitted that he's a little afraid. He says, quote, I think my friend who was killed 2 weeks ago in Gaza and my responsibility to look after the wounded. There's an 80% chance that there'll be casualties. I have faith in the platoon medics, and I also want to have time to say a prayer before going into battle myself. Not many are religious in Golani, but most of the guys believe, he said. So he activated his cell phone. He read a message from his girlfriend of 2 months. It said, sweetie, look after yourself. You're the most adorable man in the world. But he was disappointed. Early in the day, he told her for the first time that he loved her, and she was the best girl I have ever met in my life. He said, and if you print that, it will help the war effort. So I thought it would be good to actually speak it. So, I mean, these are the kind of soldiers that I know. This is the kind of army that I know. This is the kind of army I've had direct experience with. This is the kind of comrades that my son had in the army. There is something unique and special about our soldiers, about our pilots, about how we conduct a war. But we're in a very strange dilemma here. We have an enemy that sits, has prepared for 6 years with an incredible defense, $100 million of Iranian funding, intricate tunnels, intricate weapons, specialized training, ideology of fanaticism, training kids from the time they're very young to grow up in a situation that allows incredible discipline.
I wanted to make a comment about training in the young. I think it was on Fox. I don't have Fox. I only watched it that one night I was here with you, Steve. But on one of the then the other two channels I have are both the Israeli channels, and they kept showing, it was like a background to a discussion, a series of shots of a Hezbollah march. I think they were all the same event, but they were different units marching. And I don't know if you've seen them when they do that sort of running in place kind of marching with the knees real high and so on.
And then goose step.
A kind of goose step. And then there was another one of a group of children, I would say 6-7 years old, in red berets and army uniforms, each one carrying, I assume, a plastic Kalashnikov, although it's hard to tell, marching together. It was quite a large size group. And I can't understand how people don't, by seeing that, realize what a distorted and what a the kind of the advantage that they're taking, the really immoral position they're taking vis-a-vis children, when you talk about for the good of children and so on, save the children and those kind of institutions and organizations. And here you have, as an institutional process, they all are wearing the same uniform and they're all marching together in quick step, to get really together. And these are children. This is what they're spending a good part of their childhood doing. And there's something about that that is so incredibly wrong. I kept waiting to hear some kind of comments about it or to read something about it or people to pick up on it and to understand how how distorted that society is. And it really makes it very, the challenge is, but we know about that. We know about this challenge from in front. This is not the first time we've dealt with this community. And we know that's how it's played, and that's how the guerrilla game is played, and the rules were laid down by Mao Zedong not that long ago, but certainly quite a while ago in the 40s and the 50s, that the guerrilla swims in the ocean of the people, and that makes him very hard to discern from among the people. He dresses and he like them, he behaves like them, he is one of them. So that they can fight from and return to that position in which it's hard to or impossible to delineate them from everybody else. But that's part of the challenge, and we have to know that that's a challenge, and we have to know that we're constantly faced with that challenge when fighting against these communities, whether it's the Hezbollah or the Hamas. And we have to accept the danger, we have to accept the challenge of being able to do this in a proper way, in an adult way, and in a Jewish way.
So there's a fellow by the name of James Lewis. He's a contributor to American Thinker. It's an internet site. It's called AmericanThinker.com. And he had an interesting analysis of this was only a couple of days ago. He has an interesting analysis of the current situation. So I'm just going to read briefly a couple of things. Maybe we can discuss them. He says, like the U.S. armed forces, the Israel has a military ethic of avoiding civilian casualties if at all possible. That puts the Western soldiers at a massive disadvantage against the martyrdom cult of Hezbollah and Tehran. Nasrallah and Ahmadinejad believe that they're ready to die for their twisted concept of Allah and paradise, and by some perverse alchemy that makes them feel justified in sending others to their deaths as well. You too can have your ticket punched to paradise if you happen to be living in a neighborhood. He said, today's fighting is one battle in a much longer struggle between Western powers and militant Islamism, in spite of what the reporters say. Men with murderous mindset of tribal warriors, but armed with the weapons of the 21st century. Fighting Hezbollah to a draw rather than destroying its capacity to fight would be a setback for the West. Military, it would not be a disaster, but the perceived victory of radicalism might swing Islamic opinion toward Tehran. A horse race is already underway between the Shiite and the Sunni terror groups. The result could well be more dangerous attacks on Western countries. Israel itself might be seen as vulnerable and might have to prove its mettle again in a very public way. Among the dozens of strategic factors, the deadliest one is Tehran's rush to nukes. We all know that. There's a strong reason to think that Iran represents the first suicide murder cult in control of a major military power since Tojo's Japan. Combine nuclear weapons with a mad eagerness to use them, and the only rational defense is preemption. This administration understands that iron logic, as difficult and risky as it is. In sum, Lebanon is a proxy war between a martyrdom-seeking Iran and the United States that is only trustworthy and responsible major power in the world today. That is the context for the battle in Lebanon. Under some circumstances, it would be rational for Israel to accept less than a conclusive defeat of Hezbollah, all of which leads to a compelling conclusion for rational people, that the sooner Khomeini cult in Tehran can be brought down, the better. The Lebanese proxy battle is important, but not nearly as much as cutting off the monster's head, which I say amen. And the question is, when you have the foreign minister of France praising Iran as a responsible player in the Mid East, we have a serious problem, Houston.
Yeah, and we're all on the same planet.
Unfortunately, I still live on the same planet with that idiot. So anyway.
Yes.
So we have...
It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few days. I think it's very critical, and evidently there's some surprises left over for us. But I believe that if we don't manage to subdue Hezbollah quickly, within a matter of days, that there's not going to be any more time.
I think it's going to take.
The world is going to close us down, and we ourselves are going to close ourselves down. Our port system is like sorely overtaxed. There are many things that are not coming into the country. We're a country that unfortunately has developed a tremendous dependence on imported goods, whether it's food, which is critical, or gasoline, which is critical, or television sets, which are not critical. And as that becomes more difficult and those all those people in the bomb shelters, I think after us coming on to 3 weeks, have had quite a bit enough. And those who are on, who have left, can only stay away from their homes for so long and stay in hotels, as the case may be, or staying with friends or camping out somewhere. I think our ability to play through this kind of process is also limited. And I think we're unfortunately reaching the limits. And something is going to have to move very quickly in our favor, because a loss in this case is a very, very serious and very long-term loss. And to a degree, we've already lost a great deal of our prestige, and we've lost a great deal of our deterrent power by taking so long and getting so little done. And it's not a matter of who are we to know what's really going on or not. It's obvious. If there are 100 missiles a day falling in the Galil for 17 days, 18 days, then there's a questionable success. I mean, then the success is questionable of how successful we are. And there are always those who are looking to see us as being unsuccessful. And whether we really are or not, you know, on some subtle level, on the gross level, on the level of falling missiles, I don't think there's any discussion.
I think that the resilience of our people is stronger than one might imagine. I think that the sacrifices that would need to be made can be made and will be made here by our people, especially if they see that we have no choice but to do what needs to be done to destroy or to cripple Hezbollah as much as we can. I do think there needs to be some kind of political compromise here in terms of what to do once Hezbollah is disarmed. I mean, we have no choice. We have a dilemma here. And this is where the outside forces come in, European Union, in getting Lebanon's government on board to take responsibility for its territory, and be involved in the consequences of its actions, and not to distance itself from its own responsibility. I think that yes, we need to do things quickly. I don't think we have a choice about that. But quickly remains to be, what is it, a day, a week? I don't know, and I'm open to allowing, you know, the military to hopefully, and I'm sure they realize this, but to understand what's necessary and what's needed to be done as fast as humanly possible. And I think they have that in mind. Certainly in this country, with all the Jews that we have in this country, we are certainly making our points well known privately and publicly, and letting the government know and the military know when we're dissatisfied with the results. And I think that's real clear. So on that note, this has been Steve.
And Yoram.
For IsraelScene.com. And we've been sharing our insights, opinions, rants, and raves, 2006 Lebanon War. Thank you.